Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, to the Winter is Coming Game of Thrones podcast. This is Take the Black, and I'm your host, Razor, and I'm here with Isis, who doesn't think I remember to introduce her on the podcast. I'm here with Corey Thon and Corey Smith, and we're here to talk about Game of Thrones, as you might have heard from the intro. Great, let's get right into it. HBO released a kind of a look ahead. It wasn't their year ender they usually do. It was kind of a look ahead, look back at the programs they have going on. And wouldn't you know it, we got a 3-second, if I'm being generous, tease to season 8. It was Jon Snow coming home.
3-second tease, name of your sex tape. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, that is the name of my sex tape. If I'm being honest,
shout out to Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Can't wait for the new season.
So, anyway, we got an intro there to or a teaser there. I'm sorry, phone threw me off my game like always. And it's Jon hugging Sansa. It was like three seconds, and there really isn't anything to pick apart except for this one. They're at Winterfell, so Jon has returned to Winterfell. We all knew it was going to happen anyway. Two. Sansa is looking off as she's hugging Jon, like, either A, she's staring at somebody and mean mugging him, or B, she's like, why the fuck are you back at Winterfell? I don't want to hug you. Why'd you bring that blonde-headed bitch to Winterfell? Get the fuck out. Where are we going to put that dragon? All that kind of shit. So, that's what happened. Isis, did you see the teaser?
I did, and I was left underwhelmed. I definitely was looking forward to something more, but I'm gonna expand out on what you were saying. I absolutely think that Sansa was mean mugging the hell out of Daenerys Targaryen and was like, who this bitch up in this place? I don't know you. You don't go here. And she was definitely, you know, I mean, that's the only thing I can think of is that, you know, and then she's also going to probably, you know, he probably walked in hand with her. And again, bitch, who you be, who you, I don't mess with you. I don't fuck with you. And
dragons now?
Exactly. So I think all of that, and I think she was probably definitely picking up on some boat sex vibes that were probably going on, you know, because they just emanate that just, you know, boat sex.
They probably smell like boat sex.
They probably do.
They still have the stank on them.
They got the stank on them. They got the stank on them. And then not only that, but she may be surprised that she's seeing her ex-husband as well.
Oh, snap. You think Tyrion's there? Boom!
Exactly. Boom, baby, boom. So I think she's trying to work through some things, one of them being that Danny's there. I think number two would probably be her ex-husband being there. And he's like, hey, wifey, what's up? And
because they are still married in the laws of all the gods.
Exactly. So I think that could be it. And another person we don't know, I mean, because of this being such a very short, you know, or I should say condensed season, it may be Tyrion's brother too. They may have all rolled up at the same time.
Jamie.
Because yeah, there you go, boo. There you go.
Oh, I like it. I like how you're thinking, Corey Smith. You kind of picked this apart at Wick. What could you take away off the top? Like, what was your biggest takeaway from the moment?
Yeah, she's clearly mean mugging Danny. And you know, like when you bring your new boyfriend and new girlfriend home to meet the family, Sansa is definitely meme-mugging, like, yeah, like Isis said, who the fuck is this? Why is she here? I'm assuming, though, that this is before she sees Dany's dragons, because I like to think that once Sansa sees the dragons, the Dothraki, the Unsullied, that she's going to see the benefit that Dany brings to the whole cause. Even if she doesn't ever end up liking Danny.
Yeah, she made a deal with Littlefinger, for Christ's sake, to get
through. Right, that's what I'm saying. And they spent all of season 7 with Sansa. I mean, I know she was arguing with Jon, but she was also walking around Winterfell and making sure all the preparations were made and all this stuff. So I got to assume when Danny really shows up, that you know, all her armies and her dragons, that Sansa will at least, you know, tolerate.
Oh, you know, no. She's going to be like, Jon, did you flip it and reverse it? That's what she's going to say.
I think that it's gonna have, like, Danny's gonna, I think Danny and John arrive ahead of the army. Like, I think it's gonna be a big scene. Like, you're gonna see the entire army, because what we know is at the end of season 7 that John and Danny are arriving by boat. They had boat sex at to White Harbor, where they meet the Dothraki and the Unsullied, where they're gonna march together to Winterfell. So it's gonna be a big scene where they all get up together, and then the dragons are gonna fly in. So whatever mean mugging Sansa might do to Danny, just for a little bit, as soon as Drogon flies over, she's gonna piss herself and be like, "You can put your bags in Mom and Dad's old room."
I think one thing that nobody's quite touched on yet either is the inherent distrust toward Targaryens that Starks have, that all of Westeros would have, because some of it's based in, like, just facts that they, you know, did some jacked up stuff before they got, you know, ousted, but a lot of it's also propaganda and everything else. Like, there's just a lot of distrust, I think, from Westerosi or whatever for Targaryens at this point, especially from Starks, who have such a complicated history with, you know, non-Northerners, and yeah. I think that ties into her meme mugging a little bit. I do not, because David, you mentioned it up top that people were suggesting, you know, oh, maybe Sansa's bummed that Jon is back because now he's in charge again. No, do not do that shit. You did that with Arya last year. Oh, is Arya going to kill Sansa? No. That manufactured crap-ass drama has no place in a show this good. It felt out of place as crap last season. If they try to do it again this season, they better have Sansa turn, because if they really and truly tried to make us think that Sansa might turn on Jon and Arya and everybody, and then, oh no, it was a misdirect, that's weak. Do not do that. There's already enough drama in her arrival. We don't need extra shit.
Smith, so. I want to know real quick, Smith, do you think she does a heel turn?
No, that's no, stupid.
No, there's he'll no turn fucking, for Sansa.
No, we don't have... If this is like season 3, maybe, but we don't have fucking time. We got 6 episodes. Like, what? She's going to turn heel, and then, like, the show's going to be over. Like, that's stupid. That's just shitty storytelling. So,
yeah, there's just not enough runway.
Yeah, there's not... Yeah, exactly. There's not enough time for that shit.
But just... Oh, God, that's Sansa's music! Just gonna say that, god damn it, yeah. Look at her slithering like a snake.
My only other thought, and this is, she might not be mean mugging Danny, but I'm wondering, has Bran and Sam told Sansa?
Boom.
Oh, that, shit.
You know what I mean? Like, so if they walk in arm in arm, clearly, you know, boo and all that shit, and Sansa's in her head like, that's your aunt, and you just boned her.
That's like, your aunt, that's your nephew, ooh, you nasty.
Yeah, no shit. Right.
See, I don't exactly. think so. I don't think that would happen. I think if Bran was going to do it, Bran's going to... I mean, it's going to be Bran and what's his name, sitting Sam. Down with Jon.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I think it'll be a personal reveal, but yeah. Does the honor of Jon Snow get in the way and he's got to reveal it to everybody? Look, guys, sorry, I know you don't trust the Targaryens, but look, I'm the best Targaryen. I'm the greatest Targaryen ever. I'm the greatest, really. I'm the best.
Why you gotta mess him up like that? Why you gotta mess up my little beautiful symbol?
I don't know.
Who's too pure for this world, and he sounds like he's from Jersey Shore. Okay, so so this is my thing with that, is that I think that, you know, with the whole Sansa, you know, situation, I really just feel like, to be honest, she's looking at it, hey, your family is the reason why my Aunt Lilianna died. She was kidnapped. I mean, that's the rumor that they heard. That was uh-huh. what the story is.
Uncle and grandfather, too. Uncle
yes. And grandfather. Yeah, by the way. So, you know, I think that's where the distrust really lies, is that they have so many losses in due in part of the Targaryens. And I think once that, you know, Sansa finds out that Jon Snow is actually a Targaryen, where she'll go, oh, okay, well, Maybe all Targaryens aren't so bad. I don't know. But, I mean, I think that's probably where it's going to go. But instantly, that's where her mind is going to, because their family has way too many losses at the hands of this family. So
not all Targaryens burn people. Hashtag not all Targaryens.
Not all Targaryens.
All right. I think we've talked about this plenty enough. In fact, we talked about it way more than I thought we would. But, hey, that's good. We poured over some things. It's great. So
3 seconds. 3 seconds of footage.
Imagine what's going to
happen. Imagine episode one of Mac.
I would just say right now, you're just going to want to download the episode of Winter is Coming, because it's probably going to be long.
When that first trailer comes out, you better just download it.
Yeah, okay. you're going to want to listen to it while you sleep. While you drive, it's going to be a long one. So let's just get that over with. I bet our next peek at season 8 will either be the year ender, which happens at Christmas, or since we know it's coming in the first half of 2019, next year, we might maybe get a little bit of a sneak peek towards the year ender, like, you know, this, you know, but I doubt it. I doubt it, because we've had Game of Thrones in the first half of a year before, like most of the time, it comes out in April or March, and we don't see a trailer until the end of February. So I think the year ender is the next look we'll get. Because remember, in 2000 or last year for season 7, the year ender gave us Arya on a hill on her horse looking at Winterfell, and that was the little tidbit that we got for season 7.
Look, I'm going to tell you something right now. Game of Thrones at this point doesn't have to send out any fucking teasers.
No.
We'll still freaking talk about it. I mean, that's the one thing about this show, is that they got this on lock, is that they don't have to drum up any, like, you know, excitement about the show. People are already jazzed up about this shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally 3 seconds of footage in that's been chopped up with all the other HBO shows, and we talked about, what, I don't know, what, 15, 20 minutes? I mean, come on.
Corey Smith turned it into a whole article for Winter is Coming.
Well, there's
we
that.
We did like 4 articles on it.
Yeah, oh, my God. It was ridiculous. Clickbait. Everybody read the shit out of it, too.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, we're just doing it in a vacuum. Everybody read that shit. So people are thirsty.
Thirsty-ass bitches who read that article.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be some great stuff whenever that next footage comes out, so I'm looking forward to it. So let's move into our tonight's topic, what we're going to be doing for the next few podcasts leading up into 2019, is we're going to be doing a series of what-ifs and how events led up to the major battles and events in Westeros and Game of Thrones. And we're going to look at it from a Shonley standpoint. There's really, at this point, no need to talk about what happened in the book. Number one, we already outpaced the books back in season into season 5. Number two, Corey Smith and I are boycotting any news from the Winds of Winter book, because we don't believe it's coming out until never. So that's right. No book until never. So we don't think we're going to get a new book. Anyway, so we're just going to talk about this from a Shonley standpoint. Tonight we're going to talk about the very first big battle for Game of Thrones, the Battle of the Blackwater that happened in Season 2, and it saw Tyrion Lannister lead the forces of King's Landing to defend against Stannis Baratheon. There was a lot more involved in that, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. So I'll lead it off with the Battle of the Blackwater. You've got basically the good guys versus the bad guys. We were introduced to Stannis and Melisandre in Season 2. Melisandre's burning everybody, and you're like, I hate this bitch, really. Like, she's killing everybody, and I don't understand why she's got to bring her religion up in here and burn people just because they don't like it. And then she brings Stannis, who's a dickhead, really. Let's be honest. Stannis got really popular on Reddit because people were like, Stannis and Manus. But he was a straight-up dickhead who killed his daughter in the end. So let's just put that out there. So really, the bad guys in this scenario, in my point of view, is Stannis and his army. The good guys were Tyrion. Tyrion led the forces of King's Landing. And as you saw during the battle, he even went out and got mixed it up. Himself. He didn't just stand back and let his soldiers do it for him. He got his hands dirty. So I'm going to take the point of view that this was a good versus evil. Stannis and Melisandre with the Lord of Light was evil at this point, and Tyrion was the good guy. So, Corey Bone, I'm going to go to you because I like to get your quick hot takes on these things. What, leading up to the Battle of the Blackwater, what event in your mind was like a catalyst or a main thing that led up to the Battle of the Blackwater?
Ned Stark figuring it out. I mean, that was the big thing, is it figuring out that, because if you look, you know, one thing that we as show watchers and book readers, and maybe the book, I haven't read the books, but the books might do a better job of emphasizing this, but as a show watcher, you have to remember that from the perspective of just some dude living in King's Landing or wherever, this is Baratheon versus Baratheon. This is the rightful heir is actually Joffrey, the king's son, so he's the heir. Why is Stannis trying to take it? The whole reason that Stannis feels like he can rally support is because of what Ned found out, right? Mm-hmm. Unless I'm misremembering something from all of season one.
You're right.
So that, along with Ned's assassination, because I feel like, because that led, okay, so Ned's assassination, because he found out, led to, and refused to, you know, whatever, led to the Stark Rebellion, which pulled troops out of King's Landing. True. To go fight the Starks in the north, which left King's Landing vulnerable, which is what gave Stannis the idea, but then Renly, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, so Ned's investigative research into everything, him, you know, CSI Westerosing up and down of the, it's what truly caused, you know, I think you could look at, like, maybe the first domino show-wise, so.
I agree. Great point. Anybody have anything to add to that? Because I know, Smith, you're really dying to get in here.
I mean, because it was, I don't know that they really emphasized it in the show, but I can't remember or not, but in the books, Stannis is investigating Joffrey and everyone else with Jon Arryn. And then when Jon is murdered or poisoned, that's when Stannis hightails it to Dragonstone.
Yeah, he bails because he was on the Small Council.
Right, and well, him and Jon Arryn were the ones that were, they were dual investigating it, and so they were going around, and they went through all the steps that Ned eventually goes through.
Rizzoli and Isles, baby.
Right, exactly. and so when Jon is poisoned, Stannis hightails it because he knows everything Jon knows, and so that's why he books it to Dragonstone and just hangs out there. Until later on. For me, one of the biggest catalysts was Joffrey beheading Ned. Because that ends up, that's the catalyst that sends Tyrion to King's Landing, right?
Isn't that what the other Corey,
kind of. I think he's getting to the different jump off point.
Okay, I was just wondering because I was what better looking Corey said.
Right, yes, indeed, indeed.
Hold on, terrible point. But what I was going to say was that because that's why Tywin sends Tyrion to King's Landing, right?
Is because Joffrey should have never. Yeah, Cersei's out of control, and
can't control Joffrey. Joffrey, you know, clearly it was Joffrey that ordered, because even Cersei knew better than to kill Ned, and so that's what sends Tyrion there, and that shapes the battle because, you know, you kind of see later on when Cersei gains control, she has no, like, you know, strategic mind for battles or making alliances or any of the stuff that Tyrion does during season two, sending Marcella to Dorne, sending you know, promising Tommen to different people, and that whole the whole gambit he's running in season two. So for me, the biggest catalyst was when Joffrey beheads Ned, because that just, it sends all kinds of different people into different directions, especially Tyrion going to King's Landing and actually making the battle a battle.
Yeah, because without Tyrion, there would have been no battle, honestly. I think it would have been over, like, in no time. Like, Stannis would have had the control of the city.
Right, but also, it's not just the straight battle of it, but remember, it's Tyrion who suggests sending Littlefinger and trying to woo the Tyrells after Renly is killed.
Boom, Yep, boom, and good point.
And that whole thing, which obviously the Tyrells end up coming to, you know, the Tyrells and Tywin end up coming to the rescue and turning the tide of the battle. So for me, Tyrion being there was the key thing, because I don't think a lot of those other events happen with Cersei and Littlefinger and Varys being the only ones in charge.
We've got two guys saying that Ned Stark is part of what started this all. What's your take on that?
No, I mean, I think it's absolutely right. I mean, I think if you look at this whole entire story, it all really starts with Ned Stark. And,
fair point.
So I think whether he, you know, his foibles or his successes, I mean, at the end of the day, it all comes back to Ned in that whole, you know, chain of events. I mean, if you really want to get technical, I mean, hell, we can even go back, you know, even further than that. But I think at its core, at what we're trying to talk about, yeah, I think it's definitely Ned, you know, his investigation, who, you know, the only person who has to win from that investigation is Stannis. You know, he's the only winner in that whole equation. And then not only that, but, you know, the fact that Ned got himself fucking killed, you know, maybe accelerated the timeline for Stannis to really kind of bum rush it.
Yeah, because Ned uncovers the truth. He carries out Jon Arryn and Stannis' investigation, and he uncovers the truth. And when he writes that letter to Stannis telling him that he's the lawful heir, the lawful successor to the Iron Throne, it's revealed that Joffrey's a bastard, that Cersei is banging her brother, and that Joffrey and the whole Lannister crew, none of them are Baratheons. So, without Ned uncovering that, none of this happens. We go back to a peaceful... If Ned doesn't uncover anything, Ned remains alive. For the time, anyway. Or at least he does remain alive, because he gets to go back to Winterfell. He's like, he fucks off back to Winterfell, and the North never rises, and you don't have all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. I agree.
You know, and I think also, you know, the fact that Stannis was able to get that sellsword, or the sells captain, I don't know, was it Sam?
Celador Sand.
Yeah, so I think that was another, you know, kind of feather in his cap that said, hey, all this is kind of lining up for me. I need to go ahead and, you know, go while the getting is good. You know, I got rid of my brother, my little brother, which is fucked up as well. You know, I got this confirmation that I'm the rightful king. And I also got this captain who, you know, is going to basically get me to where I need to, you know, is going to fight with me and have their men. So I think for him it was like, hey, man, all these things are lining up for me. Why not?
I want to say, too, like a couple of you guys have mentioned Renly in this whole conversation. Stannis fucked himself like having his brother killed. Like, if
100%.
Had Renly not died, Renly would have made the push to King's Landing. Renly would have absolutely dominated and taken over King's Landing. And Renly would have been the king, and Stannis could have contested it, but Renly would have not killed his brother. Renly would have let his brother take Dragonstone or Storm's End or wherever he wanted, and he would have offered him a spot on the Small Council. If he, you know, eventually Renly would have ironed that out with his brother. Because you don't get this in the show, because you don't get a lot of Renly in the show, but in the books, Renly loved his brothers, especially Robert. So you don't really get that a lot in the show, but...
Well, and I think all three of us, you know, looked to Ned, because that was what led to, you know, King's Landing looking like what it looked like, mm-hmm. bereft of troops, because they're off fighting the Starks and everything. But that's actually, when you think about it, Renly being killed is what opened up the Tyrells to being available and willing to partner up with a new house, one mm-hmm. that they were just warring against, which led to pretty much all the events up until, you know, the last season and a half.
Right.
If, you know, the Lannisters and the Tyrells together, so who is drinking ice from a cup? Jesus Christ.
That would be the other Corey.
Fuck.
Mute your mic, you goober.
I heard you fart like 5 minutes ago, Smith.
Fuck. Not true.
Savage.
Lies.
Right. But no, anyway, but I agree with you. Yeah, Renly, and I think, you know, David's right, that, and I think Smith actually mentioned this too, that Renly's death scattered a bunch of troops, and this all comes back, and this is something else that I don't think Stannis really understood what he had in his kind of forced this together with, you know, the, like Isis pointed out, with the captain of the whatever, basically like a Han Solo type guy, like I'm a raider, you know, whatever he is. I don't even remember that guy's name.
He's in like
episode and a half.
Son.
But you know, it just reminds me of Robert's speech that he gave that one time about the difference between five armies and one, you know, being united.
Yeah.
The fist, yeah, being united behind something. You know, I don't think that Stannis ever had the support of his troops the way that Renly did. And I don't think that, I mean, as, you know, the more into the Red Priestess shit he got, the less, I think, true support. I don't know, maybe it might be different because the book readers might have a more interesting perspective on like that, but even his speech when he jumped out of the boat and like, let's go take it, like, ah, like, all right, I guess, like, great speech, like, it's
there's,
I don't know,
there's
don't
a
know
great quote has, there's yeah. a great quote we didn't get on the show because this character was never put in the show, but in the books during this whole time there's a blacksmith at Castle Black, what's his name, Corey Smith, the blacksmith who led the wall for a while.
Fuck. God.
Well,
dang.
It's well,
Jason.
His Eric. His name was Eric. No, I don't know. We'll remember his name in a little bit.
Keep talking. I'll remember.
Yeah. We'll remember. We'll Google it and remember it. Anyway, so there's just armorer. The he's a one armed blacksmith. He lost his arm in the battle of the one the Baratheons faced Targaryens. I think he lost it in the Trident. Anyway. He actually made Robert's Warhammer, and he knew the three sons. He knew Robert, Stannis, and Renly, and he was the blacksmith.
Donald
Noy was his name. Anyway, long story short, he makes this quote. He says this quote that Robert was. He talks about Robert being youthful and crazy and like wild, and Renly being soft and pleasant, and everybody liked Renly. But Stannis, nobody loved Stannis. But he was hard and brittle like iron. Like he would never bend, but you know he would eventually break. You know he'd be brittle. So
Robert was steel. Robert is steel. Renly was copper because copper's pretty and shiny and all that. And then yeah, Stannis is iron. Like he'll always break,
right.
But he won't bend. So yeah.
What you're to get to that whole point, Corey Thone. I'm sorry, but I took a big such a sidetrack there. But you're right. You're absolutely right. Nobody loved Stannis. The people who followed Stannis were his wife's family, the Florents. They followed Stannis. The people who were at Dragonstone. And the reason he got Salador Sand and his ships and his pirates was because of Davos Seaworth. So had Davos not won Salador Sand over, you don't have all those ships. You don't have people to carry Stannis' troops to King's Landing in the first place. So it was the people that worked for Stannis and who surrounded around Stannis who got success for him. But Stannis himself, nobody loved him. Nobody would follow him. And that's the whole downfall. When they have that meeting, when Renly and his crew meets up with Stannis and his crew, and he says the whole comment, it's another book thing. He has a peach. He offers Stannis a peach, and Renly bites into it and offers it to Stannis. It's a big slight to Stannis, whatever. He slaps him in the face, basically verbally. That whole thing is Stannis doesn't get. If he would just, I don't have an army big enough. Renly's got the big army. Renly's a Baratheon. Fuck it. Why not let Renly be king? But Stannis always wanted to follow protocol. He never bent. He would never bend. So he eventually broke. But, yeah. So there's a lot of factors that lead up to the battle. Renly, Stannis killing Renly, and Ned Stark doing what he did and being killed. I'd also say that had Bronn not assisted Catelyn Stark in wresting Tyrion Lannister and helped her bring him to the Vale. Tyrion doesn't have a champion to get free of the Vale, and either Tyrion dies by Lysa Arryn's command, or he's in a Sky Cell when all this happens, and Tyrion never makes it to King's Landing. So that's another thought to think about. But I agree that Tyrion, as far as the actual battle itself goes, if Tyrion doesn't come to King's Landing, then King's Landing is overtaken immediately. Issus, when you got a character that's so well beloved like Tyrion, he kind of overshadows other characters in the show. Now, do you think that had Tyrion not come to King's Landing, do you think that Cersei could have somehow defended it without him?
No, I really, I don't think she was, well, I don't know. There are a lot of times where, you know, basically Tyrion was kind of putting his sister in her place. Like, you know, let the grown people talk here, okay? Especially when they were having those, meetings, and he was the hand of the king. And so there was a lot of times where she was trying to get into those conversations. And tell me if I'm remembering this correctly. I don't know. I've had wine and slept since I watched this episode. But I think that, you know, I don't think so. And I can only go from what I've seen. Maybe if she was involved in more of the strategery of, in the conversations, but I just don't think it would have been a success. I mean, Tyrion was the linchpin that was holding this all together. He really outdid himself in this, and I just don't think that at that time Cersei could have come up with a plan the way
what
he
was
did.
What was Cersei doing? Cersei was having the guys make wildfire, but what was she?
And then she was in the Holdfast with the women and children, and then she was going to like kill herself and her kids.
Yeah, and she actually had the poison ready for Tommen, but I can't remember who can help me on this. What was Cersei making the wildfire for? What was she going to use it for?
If I remember, she was making wildfire to like spread across the battlefield. Like she was just going to blow everything up.
I thought she was going to use it to kill. Like if Stannis won, she was going to blow up King's Landing or something like.
I think that she made a passing comment about like blowing up, you know, the keep or something like that. But yeah. If I remember, and I'm looking at the, I'm trying to find it here in the, I have the Game of Thrones wiki stuff that I pulled up and made a spread, like a sheet out of.
Nice.
So I could have, because I couldn't remember everything. It said something about like she was going to use it all over. Like she was just going to. I don't think she really cared who got hit as long as some of Stannis' men got hit. And it was Tyrion's idea to do a centralized attack with the...
On the water.
Wildfire. Yeah.
Yeah, with the ship. Yeah.
And it was Tyrion, let us not forget, who had the chain built. Without the chain holding all the ships in, right, Corey Smith? Without the chains, you don't have the ships being trapped.
That's book only, though.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
He didn't use the chain on the show?
No, yeah. The chain was
Goddamn.
Not on the show.
The chain was the chain was being built north of the wall by the Night King to pull dragons out of the water.
Yeah.
Yes. Nice.
And the swimming whites.
They don't swim. What are you talking about?
Okay.
The chain was not on the show. And that was kind of a disappointment.
Goddamn.
That the chain wasn't on the show.
That was huge.
It was pretty spectacular.
It was, in fact, I can't believe I misremembered this, but like Tyrion built this chain. Without this chain, he doesn't win the battle because the ships could just turn around and leave Blackwater Bay. They could just leave and they could escape everything. And so like and
So you're saying that the chain kept them together while they were running through the shadows?
No. So the Oh god. So the chain closes off the river, and then all the ships smash. Not only does they all smash up on and catch fire, but there ends up being this like this impromptu bridge of
ships.
That Tyrion fights across
because Stannis
as the ships are kind of falling.
Stannis is actually on the other side of the Blackwater Bay when this happens. He uses his ships to come in to, like, to harry the city, and he's on the other side waiting for his ships to come in, right? And once they're there in the bay, he's waiting for them to come across and ferry his men across. Whenever Tyrion's chain blocks all the ships and the wildfire starts happening, Tyrion knows, he takes a calculated risk. He knows that whatever Lannister ships are there in the bay, they're going to be destroyed too. He knows that. But what happens in the books is, once the chain comes up, they're all fucked, and this bridge happens. All these ships are smashed. Tyrion's crew starts blocking people from coming across the bridge, because Stannis is bringing his guys across the bridge. And that's where Tyrion gets hacked in the face by... what's his name? I forget which knight of the king.
Jason.
Not Nathan?
No.
No, his name was Craig.
Craig.
I had told Craig and them.
It was Craig and from the Kona.
I think I had it in my Sir Mandon. Is that who it was?
Sir Mandon Moore.
Moore. Yeah.
And he's the one that hit Tyrion, right?
Yes.
Okay, I had it in my notes.
Nice, nice. Well done, sir. Well done, sir.
Well, yeah, and in the books, Pod shoves him into the river.
Yeah,
Pod shoves a spear through Homeboy's face.
It's better on the show. It's better on the show. Pod,
I mean, definitely Tyrion turned, because Cersei's plan was wildfire, and then she was recruiting a bunch of people to the Gold Cloaks. She didn't really have... She didn't have a plan. She was doing the best she could, and she didn't have a plan. She wasn't trying... Like, Tyrion, we see, he goes about... He's not just, like, trying to secure King's Landing. He's trying to secure the Seven Kingdoms. You know, he sends Marcella to Dorne to kind of pacify the Dornish so that they don't jump in.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sends Littlefinger to treat with the Tyrells. As soon as they find out that Renly's been killed, he sends Littlefinger down there to, like... sway them to their side. So, I mean, Tyrion holds the whole thing together, and not just within King's Landing. He's the one, I mean, he does a magnificent job while he's the Hand of the King.
It was not too long after this episode that Varys had that awesome scene with Tyrion where he tells him, like, you're really good at this.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. And that's right. And we see that later, like in season 5, like when Varys takes Tyrion to Dany, or he tries to at least, until Jorah kidnaps him. But he really believes Tyrion's good at it, and he's not cruel. He's good at the job, and he doesn't have any of the cruelness that Cersei has.
And he actually has the good of people.
So,
in mind.
Yeah, I mean,
good for people.
This is right. Season 2 is Tyrion's big. That's what sets up his whole reputation for the show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the rest of the show, he's, you know what I mean? Season 3, he's trying to gain back. He's Master of Coin, and he's basically, you know, he's not doing anything near as impressive. And then obviously season 4, he's on trial and all that stuff. And then he's running for his life. But season 2 is where he really establishes his reputation as a good ruler, a good and just ruler. You know?
Well, and he's also trying to stave away, you know, this, you know, cataclysmic thing that could happen with the Sand Snakes. Well, I guess it was just Elyanna Sand and Homeboy as well. I mean, he was really trying to keep everything together so that way there was not this huge...
Yeah, well, you have to remember, Tywin Lannister was in the field. He was fighting. He was leading his army. And he was not... Like, he was at Harrenhal for a while. Then he leaves and to move across the north to the Riverlands. There's a lot of fighting. Tywin's moving his army back and forth. And there's not a lot of communication between Tyrion and Tywin and Cersei and Tyrion. In fact, there's a point, and this happens on the show as well. Cersei asks Tyrion, she's like, what are we going to do about this? And Tyrion doesn't have an immediate answer. She's like, I'm just going to ask Father. Blah, blah, blah. You know, and then Tywin never answers Cersei. And so she's like, well, our father's abandoned us too. Jaime's abandoned us. Tywin's abandoned us. It's just me and you. So it's like, this is Tyrion's coming out party, basically. Like, he rules, and he does it with an even hand, and he does it so well that when he goes down in battle and he's out getting, you know, getting patched up, and Tywin comes in to take the Hand of the King spot, he does his job so well that Tywin doesn't even want to give him credit for it. Because if Tywin gives Tyrion credit for what he did in the Battle of the Blackwater, then he's got to acknowledge that his dwarf son is actually good at something.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, even when Tywin gets there, he never wanted to. And that really, I mean, that really hurt Tyrion, because, you know, it's like one of those things that you're always looking for, that person who never gives you the kudos that you're always looking for them. It's almost like a, you know, person that, what is it, you know, like someone kidnaps you or something like that, and but then you end up wanting to make them happy and things like that. I don't know what I'm saying. I feel that's what I always feel like the relationship between Tywin and his son have always been. It's always been, you know, his son always looking for...
Tyrion just wanted a hug.
No, I don't even think it was that. I think at one
point... He wanted a little bit of love.
He just wanted someone, his dad, to validate him, who he feels is, you know, a great mastermind as far as, you know, strategic mind and all of these things. He just wanted that. I mean, if you can't love me, at least recognize the fact that I got something from you.
Right.
You know, and his dad was never going to do that.
Well, going into the actual battle itself, Corey Fone, let me ask you this. How does the battle itself, when it starts to unfold, we already talked about Tyrion, and we can keep saying that Tyrion's the MVP, and really he is, but what other players in this battle do you think made a major difference, or could have been the MVP besides Tyrion?
For the winning side?
For any side, really. I mean, who stood out? It's hard to say anybody from Stannis' side stood out, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't... Stannis himself, you know, you have to be impressed with in the show with his... Like, just leading. He's the front of the pack. He's jumping on ladders, climbing up. He's winning his individual fights, you know, doing a heck of a job. You know, obviously, Joffrey won the battle, so he is a war hero. And like, we should all... No, I mean, Tyrion gets a lot of the credit. I think really the reason that obviously Tywin coming in, saving the day at the end, was a huge catalyst, and Loras, right? Wasn't Loras there too?
Yeah, Loras wore Renly's armor.
Renly's armor, yeah. But I do think that Tyrion, along with Bronn and his, you know, little gaggle of helpers like Varys and stuff, they set up the wildfire boat. They planned the initial attack. They organized everything to give them the best chance, because according to, and this is something else from my notes here, Stannis had like 200 ships, including 30 of the sail vessels. He outnumbered the Royal Fleet 10 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of troops, most of the troops from Renly didn't join Stannis, but he still outnumbered them 5 to 1.
Wow.
And so they're saying that, you know, then Tywin rides in with like 30,000 troops or something.
Well, with the Tyrells, too.
With the Tyrells, yeah. But right. Regardless.
The majority of Renly's troops
if,
were Tyrells.
If that hadn't happened, you know, if the Tyrells hadn't joined forces with the Lannisters, then who knows what would have happened. So I guess really my vote goes to the crew that was able to take such a huge dent out of the, you know, the number disadvantage they had with that wildfire boat, which all the planning that went into it, was probably the MVP.
You guys, I agree. Besides Tyrion himself, besides Tywin coming in and saving, you're right. It was kind of a group effort, and it's like you have Bronn starting the whole thing off of shooting the arrow into the ship, right, and it starts the whole wildfire thing, and that blows up the ships, and Davos loses his son, and all that stuff, and then that's when everything goes crazy. Stannis still makes his way to land. The Hound is there for a little bit. He's fighting. The Hound and his group killed a fuck ton of people until the fire started, and then he was too tired and said, fuck the fire, fuck the king, and left. And then, you know, you've got you've got all the different soldiers that Tyrion put in place. I think you had the different Kingsguard. He set up. He was smart, and he wanted this. This is another thing. Tyrion wanted Joffrey to be placed in strategic spots to bolster the men. If they see their king, they'll want to fight for the king, right? And this is almost an identical, like, book for show. The show did it almost identical because Cersei, Isis, you mentioned this. Cersei's in the keep with the women, and she's making fun of Sansa. But when Lancel comes in, this is one of Lancel's final moments before like two seasons later when he comes back as a religious zealot. But Lancel comes in, and he's wounded from battle, and she punches him in his wound and tells him to go get her son and bring him back. And Lancel's like, don't you think the king needs to stay out there? So there were a lot of moments that Cersei was so incompetent and so inept in being a ruler, where Tyrion was like, hey, let's put the king out in front, not in front, but where people can see him so they know who they're fighting for. So there was a lot of people that could have been, and it's an ensemble for this side of the war that could have been MVPs, but it was a great, like, everything came together for Tyrion. But here's my question. We all know, like, okay, so the Battle of the Blackwater was, like, our first big battle on Game of Thrones, right? Like, before that, we had, like, what, the Battle of Oxcrossbone? I'm not in Thrones, Smith. And it didn't happen. But it wasn't a battle.
Nothing happened on screen.
This
is our first. Yeah, this is our first on screen battle.
Right. And
because you had the Battle of the Green Fork, where Tyrion gets knocked out right beforehand.
Right.
And then Ox Cross, where we see two guards get eaten by the direwolf.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this is our first on screen battle that was actually, you know, or even like when Jaime gets captured at the Whispering Wood.
Mm-hmm.
That's off screen. Everything's off screen up until this point.
So, being the fact this is our first real battle on screen, Phone, I'm going to ask you this question. What do you think the outcome had an effect on what's going on now? Like, how did Battle of the Blackwater affect the events that are happen now?
Well, I mean, the big one that comes out of this is, well, I guess the two big ones, let's say, and I'll just talk about one so someone else can talk about the other one, is the Stannis was pretty much rendered not completely useless, but he lost pretty much over half of his troops, a lot of his money, support, all that. I mean, he was bare bones after that, and he was, you know, scrambling. And the second thing is the relationship.
I thought you were gonna only do one, dude. What the fuck?
I said I was gonna say two and only talk about one, and then the Lannisters and Tyrells. So I will stick with Stannis and say, you know, his loss there was if I remember correctly. Post this battle is when we started getting him doubting, somewhat doubting Melisandre, doubting the Red God, which, you know, as we know, is actually super powerful. I don't know, but there's, I mean, he killed his brother with some sort of ghost baby. But there's, you know, that was that led to a bit of a rift. There was that they had to move their troops around to get out of danger because, you know, once the Tyrells were on board, they had to bail, and they just pretty much had to give up the fight at King's Landing, which then in turn, now with unified forces, completely, you know, on paper changed the, you know, rest of the war with the Starks, which we know what ultimately happened. But just even regardless, the Tyrells and Lannisters, you know, that forced a hand in that regard. But I guess the other big thing with Stannis is he eventually doubled down on being the chosen king, damn it. And, you know, the Red Priestess tells me, and I will do whatever it takes to get there. And, you know, he pretty much set a pretty unique course. Was this now... I'm getting stuff. Everything all happened so long ago. Was Blackwater was before Stannis saved Jon and yes. the Night yes. Watch, right?
Yeah,
so season four.
You're right. Yeah, like, right. You're right on point. To, yeah.
He has to go north, right, to get away from King's Landing, to regroup, to rally. He's thinking, oh, I can maybe team up with the Starks, or I don't know, but I don't know what he, I can't remember.
He wants to, he wants to win the north to his side so that he can bring those forces back.
The Night's Watch from the giant army, and, you know, it really set into motion a lot of the stuff with the Night's Watch and the Wildlings and Jon, and because that really, I mean, so, you know, Stannis losing that, you know, kind of got us to where Jon had, you know, more going his way, which I guess if you really wanted to give some credit to the Red God, could have been the plan the whole time.
R'hllor, praise R'hllor.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're absolutely 100% on point. I love that you brought the fact that Stannis had to go, he had to come back and regroup. He ended up having to go to the north, which was Davos' idea. When he made Davos' hand, Davos learned to read. He found that raven note from the wall asking for help. The wildlings were attacked, and that there were dead things attacking. So Stannis decided to hire sellswords, first of all. This is the number one thing he did first. He hired sellswords, who eventually turned on him and left. And so he lost half of his army. The majority of his army was sellswords, and they left because he wasn't able to pay them. There was too much shit going down. You know, this all happened in season 5, so he lost those guys. So they weren't his. He didn't have his own army. Number two, this is something that is so like on point. Like, had Stannis not saved the wall from the wildlings, eventually that giant army would have found a way to break in. Like, they would have worked their way in. They would have found a way. They would have finally pulled that giant out of the tunnel and came through. And the Jon Snow may have more than likely would have been killed by Mance Rayder and the wildlings in his defense of the wall. Remember, there was like 100 guys there, if that, to defend against 100, or I don't know if it was 100,000. It was tens of thousands of wildlings there. Giants on mammoths with all kinds of different kinds of crazy wildlings there. And so had Stannis not saved Jon, Jon might have died there, and we wouldn't have Jon resurrected, and Isis wouldn't have had her cinnamon bun for the rest of the show, so she would have been sad. Isis.
I would have been sad, that is true. My beautiful cinnamon bun, too good, too pure for this world.
But, I like Phone's point about Stannis leaving and having to regroup, and that was one of the major things that helped shape the rest of the show. Isis, what do you think was a good, or it was a major event that helped shape things?
Well, I mean, I would have said that the Tyrells joining, but someone else already said it.
I didn't dive into it, though. I just mentioned it.
No, you already done said it. It doesn't matter now. You done stole it. You thief.
My bad. All right.
No, seriously, I think that was definitely a game changer. I mean, Stannis, you know, the fact that they were able to see, you know, the face of Stannis, of the one who killed Renly, and then that it be, you know, in front of the Tyrells. I mean, you know, talk about, these are your in-laws. Your brother-in-law just killed his own brother, I mean, and put their whole lives in jeopardy. And I think that's what I loved about the Tyrells, that they really understood that what this death of Renly's meant. And they really had to back another horse, because the horse that they were backing now has just been, it was just killed by his own brother. So they were not safe. They
You're
had
right.
to go somewhere else.
You're absolutely right, because Mace Tyrell realized that he had fucked up when Renly died. I mean, had Renly stayed alive, he wouldn't have been a fuck up. But once Renly was dead, Mace Tyrell knew he fucked up, and he had to back another horse. Great way of putting that. He had to find somebody else to get in bed with, and
that was not a Baratheon.
So it was not a Baratheon. So he put his daughter in bed with the other side. So there you go.
Yeah, no, I feel like that was the best course of action. And I mean, I have to say that I don't believe that it was all of Mace Tyrell's idea. I mean, I would have to believe that Olenna had her own part in that.
I'm absolutely sure that she,
We may have not known of her then, but I think that she had her hand in a lot of these things. So, you know, not that Mace is a total idiot, but I do feel like that it was probably Olenna who's...
He had a good singing voice. Mace had a good singing voice, but he was a bumbling idiot.
Yeah, there is that. But I think Olenna was really kind of saying, all right, so, you know, we backed a lame horse now who's just got killed, and, you know, she had no problems with having Loras and her granddaughter, you know, between the two of them managing Renly, but, you know, now they had to really think long-term and how they were going to be able to do that. So the only thing I think Olenna really didn't account for was how fucking crazy Cersei Lannister was.
Nobody ever does, to be honest with you. Smith, so what do you think? What's the big catalyst, or not the catalyst, what's the big thing that shaped the events we are at now that came from the Battle of the Blackwater? Is there something that, like, Bone put forth Stannis and then the Tyrells with the Lannisters? What else? Is there anything else that came out of this battle?
I mean, to me, I think those are probably the two big ones. I mean, the Lannister and the Tyrell thing, I mean, that took the next, what, 4 seasons?
Yeah.
Of our time, you know, I mean, that was, you know, Cersei and Tywin, you know, initially it's Tywin jostling with the Tyrells, and then later on it's Cersei, until finally she just says, fuck it, and blows them all up. You know, so that was kind of a big
thing. I think I think you're right. Those are the two big things. I think the interesting thing, Smith, because you're one who likes to pontificate on things with Game of Thrones. what if Littlefinger was unable to secure a deal with or an alliance with the Tyrells? What if they just said, you know, fuck it, we're going home, or we're going to side with the Starks, or we're going to side with Stannis, you know?
Yeah, see, that's interesting. To me, it's almost like the Tyrells would have sided with themselves, because they make mention the Reach is the most populous region in all the Seven Kingdoms, right? Mm-hmm. Has the most people, therefore they field the biggest army. And like we've touched on, the Tyrells made up the bulk of Renly's army, right? Renly had people from the Stormlands, but the bulk of his forces were the Tyrells.
Yep.
And all their bannermen. Mm-hmm. So to me, I always figured if they, you know, they either would have sat it out, or they would have said, fuck it, we're just going to do it ourselves. And they could have still easily taken down the Lannisters by themselves.
Mm-hmm. Remember, the rock is dry. There's no more gold coming out of Castle Rock at this point.
Right, but even, I mean, you're right, and the Tyrells are the second richest family after the Lannisters. I mean, the Lannisters are basically running their whole operation on credit at that point.
Yeah, the Reach is feeding the Seven Kingdoms, basically.
Right, right. It's like the heartland of America. It's like where everybody lives, got the best farms, got all that shit.
Yeah, I like that.
And so, yeah, they could have easily taken down the Lannisters had they chosen to. Like, they could have sat back, let Stannis do his thing with everybody from the Stormlands, and then just swooped in at the last minute and taken out whoever was left alive. And then just had the Tyrells rule, which is basically how they came to power in the
first place
to begin with, right? Because yep. they were not a noble, they were not the ruling family.
They were the stewards.
They were the stewards, and then they, when House Gardner, they wiped out, then they took control. So, I mean,
looking at it on paper for me, because you haven't really mentioned this part, you said that you thought they would go on their own. I don't understand. I mean, I think it goes into the Starks' inability to play the game or the shit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But there seems to be much more sense to be made, at least in terms of Lannister versus Stark, of siding with the Starks. Uh-huh. And you know, we're being like, okay, so if Tywin, because like, is it the Mountain is kind of leading the Lannister troops?
Yeah, he's kind of leading a vanguard. Yeah, he's leading killing people.
The Tyrells and the Starks could have basically flanked that army.
Yep.
And crushed it. and then marched south together, and maybe even picked up the remnants of Stannis' army or something, I don't know, and taken King's Landing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Of course, then you get into like the thing with the phrase and stuff, blah, blah, blah.
But the reason none of that happened was, again, because Robb Stark was so much like his father, Ned, and everybody had named him King of the North. Well, kings don't bow to anybody, right?
And he would not side with Renly.
He would not side with Renly. Now, post-Renly, maybe things could have changed.
That's what I'm saying. Post-Renly, right. I don't see why the Tyrells didn't think of that.
Well, here's the thing. Robb sent the wrong person to treat with Renly's people. He sent his mother. His mother was too rigid. Catelyn was too rigid. She didn't give a fuck. And had Robb had somebody like had a little finger in his camp to send, like Roose Bolton turned on him, but Roose maybe would have been his best bet to send. I don't know if Roose was with him at that point.
Roose was, but to me, Roose was just, when he turns on him at the Red Wedding, it's just more of a, he's just being more of an opportunist.
Yeah, Roose and Tywin, there was that whole thing back and forth, where the Freys were sending ravens undercover, like undercover talk to Roose at Harrenhal, who was sending it on to Tywin. That whole thing.
Right, and I don't think Roose turned on Robb until he saw, look, this war is unwinnable. We're not, you know, the Tyrells, the Lannisters have consolidated. We're not going to win against their numbers. I think that's when Roose turned. So he positioned himself
to be
right,
the to person survive. Standing at the end of it.
Right, exactly. So I feel like before that, Roose would have been a perfect person to send because he could have totally negotiated. Especially if you think about post-Renly, okay, well now Margaery is a widow, and Margaery and Robb. I know Robb was already had, you know, heart emoji eyes over Talisa, but, you know, that would have made more political sense. But again, Robb was too much like his father, so it's a hard one to tackle as far as what could have happened. It would have been interesting because, with the Tyrell numbers, especially because if you consider the Tyrells are south of the Lannisters, and then the Starks and the Tullys would have been north, they could have easily just, you know, met up and wiped out the Lannisters in the middle, and then went on to King's Landing and finished off the job. But it's interesting. I think a lot of it lies at the fact, you know, they make a point of how Robb won every battle, but he lost the war. Because he lost it because he didn't know how to play the game of Thrones.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know
he
what?
He didn't know how to play that.
But he
knew how to play.
I think the centerpiece in all of this, I think everybody can agree, is Tyrion Lannister. In all of this, if Tyrion's not there, if somehow Tyrion doesn't make it to King's Landing, he's killed by Lysa, or he's killed by the Mountain Clans, or he's whatever, he's killed the Battle of the Green Fork, whatever happens, Tyrion being at King's Landing is what won that battle for King's Landing, and is what, you know, solidified. Thank you. Solidified the alliance.
That's how I'm going to say from that one.
Solidated, yes. Consolidated is what I was also trying to say at the same time. Yeah. So it's what solidified the alliance between the Tyrells and the Lannisters, Tyrion sending Littlefinger. So everything that happened, it all came from Tyrion Lannister, who is now the Hand of the Queen. So, like, you see him being such a badass at Battle of Blackwater, and he's been kind of inept for Dany being in King's Landing. Like, she's already lost her navy, and she lost a couple of battles, and, you know, she had to get involved with her dragons to win things. So hopefully he gets a little smarter for the war against the dead. Anyway, we're going to wrap this up where we're at. I've enjoyed talking about the Battle of Blackwater. I'm sure we'll get some more exciting battles in the future for our next podcast. So here, what I want you to do is let us know in the comments. Is there a big battle you want us to talk about? A Battle of the Bastards, the slaughter at Hardhome, even Stannis getting his ass kicked by Ramsay Bolton and then dying by Brienne. Let us know. Or is there a certain event you want us to talk about? The Red Wedding. We can talk about that all day long. Just let us know in the comments, and we'll be sure to take that into consideration.
I have something that I think would be awesome, and people can tell us in the comments if they want us to talk about it.
Yeah.
I thought about, just talking about, different characters, what we thought their strengths and weaknesses are.
Ooh, a strengths and weaknesses character show. That's also a good idea.
For the ones still alive or overall?
Yeah, just the ones. Okay, that'd
be interesting.
That could be interesting.
What do you bring to the table? Yeah.
So let us know in the comments, and we'll take that strongly into consideration whenever we come up with our next podcast topic. So for myself, for Corey Smith, Corey Thone, and for the lovely Lady Isis, this has been Tate the Black, Vlar Morghulis.